Back at you for another edition of the Horsing Around podcast. I'm Andrew Mason, joined again by Andy Lindahl of Broncos Radio Network, Denver Sports 760, KOA, AM 850, 94.1 on the FM dial. Andy, a little bit quieter the last few days as free agency has wound down, but a couple interesting things going on, and we'll start with the reports late this week that the Broncos visited with Joe Mixon, an incredibly talented running back out of Oklahoma, but also one of the most polarizing prospects in this year's draft class.
Yeah, it's an interesting story, Andrew, and certainly we don't lack any opinion in it as far as what the fans think. You know, I guess I have a hard time with this. I'm not going to claim that I know. We all know the video's out there, right? And I don't know a single person that's okay with what you've seen in the video. It bothers you to the core. But at some point, you also have to ask yourself, when does someone deserve a second chance? And again, I don't know what he's done since then. I haven't really, frankly, the kid hasn't been on my radar because you and I cover pro football. And, you know, it's this time of year where I look more into college football and whatnot. But certainly I know the story. I know the background of it. And I know about the video. It's interesting for me if John Elway and the rest of the folks over there at UC Health Training Center decide that they've vetted him out and he's shown them or they've seen enough proof that this kid deserves a second chance, then it's going to be good enough for me at the time simply because I've not looked into what the kid's done to try to reconcile for the incident. So, but it's interesting, Andrew, because his story, from what I understand, is somewhat similar to Tyreek Hill. And, you know, at what point do you – I guess there's a big part of me that says you've got to allow people a chance to try to turn their lives around. But you also have to do a lot of background investigating before you make the decision whether this person has done enough to show you that the process of turning it around is happening. And so I leave that up to those that have looked into the background of everything.
And certainly, I think, you know, there were other teams that have visited with him at Oklahoma. Also, the Bengals had him in this week. So I think some of the interest in him in terms of visiting with him and having these one-on-ones is because of the NFL's decision to not invite him to the scouting combine that took place earlier this month. I think that if he had received the combine invitation, there would have been the requisite interviews because teams, of course, are allowed to interview 60 players there. And I think that might have taken care of a lot of teams trying to get a feel for Joe Mixon, where he stands, you know, kind of get their arms around the character part of it. I think that sort of leads into the Broncos' decision to bring him in. Look, you know, he is a talented running back. It obviously everyone knows what was on the video, but you know, where is he? How contrite is he? I mean, because look, you know, people do deserve a second chance, and you know, we've seen, you know, people that have had second chances and they've atoned and they've made amends for what happened, for incidents like that. I think with Joe Mixon, the visceral thing is that there's the video. I think that it's kind of like Ray Rice. It affects people differently when they see the video. But, you know, I think it's due diligence on the Broncos' part. And look, if he's shown contrition and he's shown that he's turned his life around, you're talking about a guy who is right there with Dalvin Cook and Levin and Leonard Fournette, and obviously Christian McCaffrey is in a different category entirely, but he's in that class of top running backs in terms of the talent. You know, the production is there. You know, 6.8 yards per carry last year. Outstanding moves in the open field. He's a plus player as a receiver. He had 538 yards, right around that number in terms of receiving yards just last season. So the talent is there. So now you ascertain, what is his character? And then the other thing you figure out is, what's going to be the right spot for the risk-reward ratio on Joe Mixon? You know, we're talking about first-round talent, but does he end up, is the right spot round two, round three, or third day? You know, especially because I'm sure there's going to be a few teams that take him off the board. It's going to be one of the most fascinating things to look at over the next few weeks, certainly.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think, you know, look, both of us, I'm sure, would like to drive home because we both are the fathers to daughters that the video is disgusting. I hope nobody thinks that we're just dismissing it. We're not.
Right.
But the reality is, everybody deserves a second chance if they've proven they've taken the steps to earn that. And again, right, that's not something that I know. I don't know what he's done since then. That's why I leave it up to the team as to whether they know they feel comfortable with it or not. And B, the reality of the NFL is, because again, all I have to do is point back to Tyreek Hill. Someone may decide to give him a second chance, and you just have to know, you just have to know and be okay in your organization, whether it's the Broncos or any of the other 31 teams in the league, that you're okay saying, yes, let's give this guy a chance, or no, this just isn't going to work here. But you don't know until you talk to a kid like you laid out.
Yeah, and I think, and then, you know, kind of make a transition to the football thing. I mean, they didn't, you know, obviously they've had extensive interviews with Christian McCaffrey as well. I mean, you don't want to put too much in, you don't want to read too much into the players they're interviewing. But clearly, it looked like they're looking, that when you see reports of those type of players they're interviewing, they're looking for some explosion this year on the field one way or the other.
Well, and let's be honest about it, Andrew. I'm not surprised they're looking at some young running backs. I mean, I think if you're going to get a running back, you want to get them through the draft. And I don't know. I mean, I don't want to get too far away from the draftees, but since we're on running backs, I've got to ask you. It's amazing to me the reports come out just yesterday that the Raiders are thinking about trying to talk Marshawn Lynch out of retirement when there's a Hall of Famer in Adrian Peterson out there. I mean, what do you think is going on? Can you give us any insight? I'm shocked that the Raiders would rather talk a guy out of retirement who's been basically not worrying about being in football shape for a year versus signing a guy that just played last season. It is amazing to me that those are the options. And I guess, unless, I don't know if the asking price is too high, can you give us any reason why an Adrian Peterson is sitting out there and the Raiders would rather talk Marshawn Lynch out of retirement?
Well, I think it's the asking price. I think it's the wear and tear on Adrian Peterson. You know, he's had multiple injuries that have been severe over the course of his career. You know, he's certainly we know about the incident regarding him and his child a few years ago. You know, the on-field production you can't question. The off-field incident with his kid and the switch. I mean, I think that may be depressing his market a little bit, certainly, because that's something that affects people in a very visceral way, similar to what we discussed about Joe Mixon. But I think it's with Marshawn Lynch over Adrian Peterson, if that's the way the Raiders, you know, are going, that's where their interest is. I think it's clearly the fact that Marshawn Lynch is considered to be fresher at this point in his career than Adrian Peterson. Interesting stat, I believe there's 12 running backs all time that have changed teams after going over the 10,000-yard mark for their career. And of that group, the only one who's had a 1,000-yard team or season with his next team was Frank Gore recently for the Colts. I mean, if you think back to Emmitt Smith going to the Arizona Cardinals, Broncos fans back in the 80s.
I was going to say.
Remember the big trade for Tony Dorsett?
I do.
Remember, he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated. People are touting him as kind of the final piece in the puzzle to go, you know, because you'd had guys like Steve Sewell and Sammy Winder and Gerald Wilhite. Well, here's the potential bell cow back who was a future Hall of Famer. And Tony Dorsett was, you know, at the end of his career, didn't have the same spark that he had earlier in his career in Dallas. And that's just, you know, that's an example that Broncos fans know. But, you know, we can go down the list. You know, in Seattle, they'll tell you about Franco Harris back in 1984. They bring him in after Kurt Warner tears his ACL. And Harris does so poorly, he's cut at midseason. I mean, if you look at the history of it, the chances are not in favor of Adrian Peterson having anything resembling his past production in Minnesota. And the fact that he's coming off of an injury that cost him most of the 2016 season, I think that's giving everybody pause. And that's why he's still lingering on the market. I think someone will give him a shot, but definitely, it's kind of hard to believe when you're talking about a certain Hall of Fame running back, but he's on the scratch and dent pile at this point.
Yeah, and believe me, I remember the Tony Dorsett experiment all too well. It's funny because they actually got their bell cow back in Bobby Humphrey, at least for a couple
a year
years.
Later.
Yeah, in the supplemental draft in 89 ended up being the season that I think a lot of people thought 88 would be. 88 kind of a lost season as it was sandwiched around 3 out of 4 years in the Super Bowl, unfortunately all losses. But, you know, I guess just to stick on the Raiders before we get back to some of the draft and who the Broncos have looked at, I mean, they've been interesting. Whether Marshawn Lynch comes out of retirement or not, they've already made headlines by signing tight end Jared Cook, and they add Cordarrelle Patterson from the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, are you becoming more and more worried about that offense, or does the loss of their running back kind of balance some of that out?
A little bit, but certainly it's all about giving Derek Carr weapons, I think, and getting him to the next level. You wanted to get beyond, he had the two receivers, and of course, you know, in Crabtree and Amari Cooper, and they work very well together. Now you're starting to add supplemental parts that can keep me, that, you know, someone like Cordarrelle Patterson, he's going to be more factor on special teams because he's one of the two or three best kick returners in the game right now. But you can put him in from time to time and have him be a vertical threat. And then you're bolstering the tight end core to get you. So now you're going to get Clive Walford, who's a guy who's steadily improving. You're going to give him some help, and you're going to have another interior target. I think this is all about giving Carr the kind of options that Aaron Rodgers has, that Tom Brady has. And when you've got that multifaceted offense going any number of directions, you also, you know, you lessen the need to throw at one guy. Like, I think, you know, and we saw what Carr did against the Broncos back in November when Keith Tlaib wasn't out there. So he just simply stayed away from Chris Harris Jr. was throwing at the Broncos' other cornerbacks. But, you know, now with all these targets, even if the Broncos have a healthy Chris Harris Jr., have a healthy Aqib Talib, you have reliable targets and you can go in other directions. And so some of the struggles that the Raiders had in the two games they played against the Broncos when they were closer to full strength on defense back in 2015, I think now they're going to avoid those kind of struggles going forward and avoiding that situation because they have all these quality targets.
I don't disagree with you there at all. It could be a very scary passing game, and they do have a good offensive line. But let's be honest about it, and you're going to have to help me out. For some reason, I'm spacing the name of the Raiders running back, the number 28, went to Minnesota.
Latavius Murray.
With him gone, and I realize they started to become maybe more of a three-headed monster last year, so maybe they'll be okay, and maybe they have plans to draft one. But honestly, Andrew, in our division, and this has been talked about in the Tony Romo conversation all the time, Joey Bosa, Vaughn Miller, Khalil Mack, Allen and Justin Houston. Now, Khalil Mack obviously isn't going to be the Raiders' problem, but this is a division full of pass rushers, and I think it's funny that the Raiders have decided maybe the best thing to do is focus on more passing game, less run game. We'll see how that works out.
Yeah, and because you use that running game, you use Latavius Murray to kind of take some of the pressure off Carr. Now are you saying, maybe what they're saying is they're going to take the pressure off Carr with all of these targets, giving him options, and maybe you're doing what the Patriots do at running back, which is kind of, you know, plugging in a guy from year to year. Certainly a Marshawn Lynch would, even though, you know, he's got a great, you know, great history to him and great production, you probably wouldn't be asking for more than a year or two at the absolute maximum from Marshawn Lynch at this point. So maybe it's just something you're kind of filling in the way the Patriots do, where you're like, okay, today, you know, today it's going to be, this time it's going to be LeGarrette Blount, but next year we're going to bring in, you know, a Rex Burkhead, maybe, as they did recently in free agency, and rely on him. And maybe the Raiders is kind of following that Patriots template a little bit because they've cycled through running backs like crazy over the years.
Look, I got to throw another divisional note at you. What do you think of Dontari Poe leaving Kansas City, going to Atlanta? Honestly, had the Broncos had a little bit of interest in him, I wouldn't have too big of an objection to that because you would have stolen something from a division rival to help your own cause. But, you know, let's be honest about it. There's weight problems there. I'm not sure he's been the player that everybody's always hoped for. He's been pretty good of late, but not everything they've always wanted. Now he's out of the division. He's a guy that's given the Broncos line in particular some fits at times. He's gone. Do you feel like Kansas City's weakened at all with some of the moves that have happened here, or where do they sit in your mind right now?
I think they're still who you're chasing, but the Chiefs, I mean, losing Poe, and granted, Poe was not as good last year as he had been in previous years. There were some signs of a decline. Now, the fact that he's going to have Grady Jarrett, who we saw break out in the Super Bowl, if Jarrett carries that forward, then he and Jarrett are going to play well off each other. And I think they can cause some problems on the interior from Atlanta. But maybe also the Falcons' depth on the defensive line also will help Dontari Poe out and kind of conserve him. Maybe this is, you know, it hurts the Chiefs losing that presence because a lot of things on defense the last few years flow from Dontari Poe. That said, as he declined as last year, as he was unable to get the same kind of push, the Chiefs' defense really declined. I mean, a lot of their numbers, when you dug deep into them, especially in terms of, like, you know, when you go into per possession efficiency, things like that, they were down last year. They were down. You know, their offense wasn't great. Their defense was inconsistent. Special teams is what pushed them over the top and got them to the division title. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, even though you can, if you're the Chiefs, you're going to try to figure out ways to get that Tyreek Hill the ball more. But I looked at a decline that was happening. I think that unless they can really fill, get or fortify the defensive line, I think that their defense may fall back a little bit more. I mean, don't forget, you've got, you know, they've been looking at linebackers really hard because, you know, Derek Johnson had the torn Achilles, so, you know, no one knows, so we don't know what's up with him at this point. But it's a defense that's starting to get some holes up front. Tom Bahali isn't getting any younger either. Justin Houston's had some injuries. I think if the Chiefs struggle, they may look at not being able to bring back Don Terry Poe as a part of that, because I'm looking at that front seven and I'm seeing Poe leaving and I'm seeing guys declining and getting injured. There's some issues there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to continue to watch what they do with their preseason. Another quick note I've got to ask you about, and in mm-hmm. a way it's not, I mean, we've stayed in division right now, but one of the things that I think is interesting, Andrew, and maybe there's nothing to it, but again, the Tony Romo thing refuses to go away. At some point, maybe we need to talk about the fact that I feel like the support for Trevor Siemian's really ramping up, which for me, it's always been there. I don't know that Tony Romo really is going to be the Bronco fans' concern much longer. But with Brandon Carr and Mo Claiborne signing elsewhere, and some of the guys that I think the Cowboys, I had read before the year, one of the reasons why they wanted to do something with Tony Romo as far as get him off the roster, get some of that money off the books, was so they could re-sign those corners, at least Brandon Carr. Now they're both gone. Do you think the more guys get plucked off the market and Romo's on the roster, how tempting do you think it maybe becomes to Jerry Jones to just keep him there as a safety net for the sophomore slump with Dak Prescott?
Maybe. I think that's a really good point, because this is going to be a team that's probably going to rely a lot more on its offense. I mean, you spoke of what they're losing. Carr, Claiborne agrees to terms with the Jets. Barry Church takes a very good safety, emerging safety. Big deal with the Jaguars. You know, this Terrell McClain, who I thought had a really underrated season on the inside, he ends up going to Washington. So you're seeing a lot of the pieces that really fortified this Dallas defense and really fit perfectly with an offense that was riding the run, riding Ezekiel Elliott, and then Dak Prescott was playing off of that. That defense isn't going to hold up. And at times late in the season, what they did have struggled. So what if the dam completely breaks for their defense this year and all of a sudden Dak Prescott has to win shootouts? And what if he can't do? What if he can't do that? What if he can't take the next step? Or what if he's hurt? Then all of a sudden, yeah, keeping Tony Romo, even at that massive cap number, may have value for them, because I don't think they're going to be able to go out in the market and replace what they've lost.
Well, and look, the reality is he could still be a June 2nd cut. They could still divide it up into two. Maybe there's a late free agent that hits the market that they want to go after. But, you know, I mean, again, you just look at it. The big boom is over. The headline-grabbing free agents are gone. I'm sure Jerry would like to have had one of those if he was going to cut Tony. And I'm not still saying that this is going to be the way it plays out, but the more people you talk to, Andrew, we had Matt McChesney on the show yesterday. Look, I could name off five or six NFL guys that I know that have all said that the sophomore slump is not just something that you make up. Again, you give defensive coordinators a whole offseason to figure out what you were doing right, and maybe they figure you out, and maybe all of a sudden Dak Prescott starts to come a little more down to earth and look like the rest of his rookie class, especially with, you know, if Doug Freeze stays retired and they start taking these hits, Ronald Leary's not there to be a backup anymore. Obviously, we're happy to have him with the Broncos. I mean, all of a sudden, look, I don't know about you. Will Demps is gone. Their safety. Demps left Houston. My point being, this is a team that I don't know. I'm starting to feel like, will the Cowboys be one of those 13-3 teams, kind of like the Panthers of their Super Bowl year, that kind of has a reality check a year later when teams really game plan for them, because they're going to be the dog that's hunted in the NFC along with the Atlanta Falcons.
Well, yeah, Ian, look at their last 3 years, and you know, Romo was healthy in 2014, and they get to the divisional round. Romo's out for most of 2015, and they collapsed and go 4-12. They draft Ezekiel Elliott, and Dak Prescott does enough, and there they are winning the division. I mean, they're at the extremes. I would say, like, the reality for the Cowboys, I think if they settle at their base level, when you have those kind of pendulum swings, their base level is probably in that 8-8, 9-7 realm, which is where they were hanging out, you know, before the last 3 years. They were, you know, it seemed like every year they were in that Sunday night for a while. It didn't seem like they were in that Sunday night game in week 17, you know, go on or go home, and they're sitting there at 8-7 or 9-6 or something like that. And I think that's where Dallas is may end up with all of these losses. And again, and you know, that's why, you know, it affects the Broncos a bit too, because they play the NFC East this year. And you know, I think everyone's going to look at the schedule when it comes out next month, and they're going to point to the Cowboys game. But I actually think that the Giants game may be tougher. And if Carson Wentz, now same thing with Dak Prescott, everyone's going to have film on him. But I think Carson Wentz was making some adjustments at the end of the year that Dak Prescott wasn't, because, you know, Philadelphia was out of it and they were starting to tweak something. What if Carson Wentz takes the next step and Dak Prescott doesn't? Then all of a sudden, looking at the Eagles game being a very tough one on the schedule, maybe the Dallas one at home becomes one you say, okay, we expect to win that. It's very fast. So it will indirectly affect the Broncos. It'll be very fascinating to see.
Well, it really will. And again, maybe, you know, look, maybe they come out and they keep rolling. Maybe that running game's everything that it has been. But I just feel like, look, teams are going to adjust. The Cowboys are one of those teams, though very good. The Cowboys are one of those teams that won a lot of games late and were unable to do, you know, now you'll see if you can still do it again this year. And we saw with that week off and the late charge from the Packers. I mean, I've had a couple guys tell me that basically the Giants laid out the blueprint to beat the Cowboys, and the Packers in the same playoff calendar was able to do it. They were able to do it, you know, and it gets interesting how many other teams now follow that. I don't know, Andrew, it'll be a fun schedule to watch next year.
It will be, and because when you're playing the NFC East, of course, there's, you know, that's a division that gets a lot of coverage and a lot of publicity. So even though the Broncos are coming off a 9-7 season, I think they're going to end up with their share of spotlight games again, going against the NFC East and then against the AFC East, which means you face New England in Denver. So even with the fallback and the questions about the quarterback and the uncertainty as to who's going to start with the competition coming, I think the Broncos are going to be a spotlight team once again, and it's certainly going to be a difficult schedule. One more thing before we head out, I want to touch on. I caught up with Paxton Lynch on Friday. Very interesting to talk to him for a little bit. Talked about what he's done. We saw the video on social media about a week and a half ago. The big emphasis for him, he said, is footwork. Is that he and Charlie Taft, a former CFL and college coach, they've been working on his footwork, not doing much on his throwing motion, but the biggest thing that he knew he had to pay attention to was his feet. Also, he said he has been to Denver in the course of the offseason. He met with Bill Musgrave, Vance Joseph, Mike McCoy. They couldn't talk football. You're not allowed to talk football at that point in the year, but just the getting to know you period. And the thing I got from Paxton Lynch is that I think contrary to some of the speculation out there, he seems very focused on competing for and trying to win the starting quarterback job. He seemed very eager and very excited to get back here and start learning an offense that's probably going to be more up his alley.
Well, and it's good to hear about the footwork. I mean, look, you talk about the motion. I don't know that, you know, I didn't see any great hitch in the motion. You know, I've got some pictures from Jacksonville in particular where he started, Andrew, where the footwork is what was messed up. The balls that weren't on target, that weren't on time, that were wobbly, that were late, it's all about the footwork. Bad base, throwing off his back foot, not having a good foundation to release the throw on time. That's the kind of stuff. And again, it was the drop back and the steps and all that kind of stuff he was doing that he's never had to do before. We all know he was ballyhooed and heralded as a guy with a very strong arm when he was drafted last year. But I don't know that people understand the whole throwing motion goes into you having that strong arm. It's not about just, you know, what you can do, just flicking your wrist. And we certainly saw in Jacksonville, to me, more than anything, you could just see him thinking way too much and really thinking about the steps he needed in the drop back. I got to imagine this Mike McCoy offense is going to give him a chance to compete maybe a lot quicker than people are giving him credit for. And look, the reality is, you know, there's a lot of buzz around Dove Valley right now about Trevor Siemian, but in part, I should say UCL Training Center, but in part is because he's there. He's rehabbing an injury. So the guys, and not that they're talking football and they're not watching tape and on and on and on, but he's been around the coaches. So Paxton got his shot, and you and I both know. I'm of the firm belief they like both these young guys, and they're going to wait and see how it plays out. Unless we've said Tony Romo comes available and he's an incredible bargain in my mind, then they go after him. But if he's not, I don't think they're going on any crazy pursuit, and these two young guys are why, and the fans and the media and whoever else that doesn't want to hear the message that's basically been coming out of Vance Joseph and John Elway's mouth from the start of the offseason just need to accept that's the real situation here.
Yeah, that they've been very consistent on that message going back to January, and they reiterated again this week, and Vance, you know, kind of doubled down on it, and he said, look, we feel like we are in great shape long term because we have these two young guys. And I think, you know, they're very much in the mindset of, okay, let's let the best man win. But what they're also hoping that these two young guys can push each other. And one thing, and I'll say this for Paxton, I mean, they're, you know, they have Paxton and Trevor, they, you know, they're different personalities, but they have a good relationship with each other. And I think the thing that I'm talking to Paxton as well is that, you know, he watched Trevor Siemian. He talked with Trevor Siemian. He said he credited Trevor Siemian with showing him the ropes and kind of how to be a pro. And I think, you know, we talked about the, you know, how diligent a worker Trevor Siemian is. And I think, and some of that he obviously learned by watching Peyton Manning firsthand. And I think Paxton Lynch, as he gets back, is going to apply that. And I think he's determined to make sure that it is a competition that, at the very least, goes down to the last throes of the summer. That, you know, even if he doesn't get the job, that he's pushing Trevor Siemian. And frankly, he said he also expects Trevor Siemian to push him. And if the Broncos are the winners at the end, that's exactly where they want this to go. I think they're not concerned about the uncertainty of not having a quarterback. They're expecting these two to bring out the best in each other.
Yeah, I guess I'll just wrap it up on this, Andrew. I think every Bronco fan out there that loves to listen to the sports talk around town, of which I'm a part of, we're all referring to the narratives of last year. When it comes to the NFL, as of March 1st, whenever we started the new year, the slate was clean. So everybody needs to quit worrying about last year. If Trevor and Paxton don't change the storylines from a year ago, then guess what? The Broncos are going to have a problem. But we don't know that yet. We've got a full season to go. Everybody just needs to relax.
Sounds very Aaron Rodgers-like. All we need is to spell it out. R-E-L-A-X. Relax. Remember, this is a team that's got a lot more right than a lot than wrong with it right now. Just kind of chill and let things develop as it will.
I agree, and we'll see if they – hopefully that's how it goes down.
All right, man. Thanks, Andy. Thank you all for listening to this edition of the Horse and Hound Podcast. Talk to you again next week.